Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, we're going to start again from Yeshayahu chapter 6. We had started it already, but it's really one of the more famous, again, everything in Yeshayahu is famous, being that we've heard of, but the Kedusha comes from it. Idea that the world has different forces that exist, and we all exist in the service of Hashem, and the angels who aren't have a clear vision, they sing Hashem's praises, they perceive Hashem the way He is, and we seek to imitate the angels in our praises of Hashem. That's why we keep our feet together. The keeping of the feet together is the idea that instead of being a man has different natures. He has good inclinations and evil inclinations, and he's going in different directions. And angels, they have a singular focus. They just do what Hashem asks them to do. That's what an angel is, a being that's created to do something. We like to imitate the angels in a sense that we'd like to focus all of our energies in the service of Hashem. In fact, when we say in the Shema, we serve Hashem with all of our hearts, so Rashi there says that we serve Hashem with our good inclination and our bad inclination, which means that really our life is about taking everything we have in it and using it to in the service of Hashem. Very important concept. Christianity kind of views the world as sinful. They don't like marriage is sinful, and being involved, indulging in the world is sinful. Judaism believes that you take the physical and you elevate it, and you turn it into spiritual. In other words, we take the cup of wine and we make kiddush over it. That's how we sanctify. We have marriage and we have kiddushin. We have holiness. We have. We believe that the world was created for us to enjoy, but we use that enjoyment to serve Hashem better and to thank Hashem for it. And so there's nothing wrong in getting a food that, or doing something that you really enjoy, but it's how you use that to appreciate Hashem putting us in this beautiful world. You know, when you walk outside and the weather's beautiful and you say, oh, thank you Hashem for such a nice day. So there's nothing wrong in enjoying yourself. You don't have to go to a mountaintop, you don't have to fast, you don't have to... That's the view of taking everything we have in the service of Hashem, just like the angels. The only thing is the angels don't have a physical part. Man has a physical part. And it's a job to be what part... Man is made of flesh and blood and the spirit of Hashem. Hashem breathed into the earth, into the Adama, and He created Adam. So we have this difficulty, and how do we combine the two? How do we combine the physical nature and the spiritual nature? But when we try to be like angels, we put our feet together, so to speak. Or when we stand in front of Hashem, we put our feet together, which is we try to combine ourselves in the service of Hashem. We try to use the fact that we're flesh and blood, and the fact that we are living in a physical world, but we can use that in the service of Hashem. So that's part of the vision that he has here, and that's why throughout the high holidays we talk about the angels. You know, we praise the angels. We would like to all be angels. Now, in certain ways, man can be greater than angels, because angels, they don't have a challenge. They just do what God says, and they don't have a choice, whereas we have free will. We don't have to do, we don't always live up to what we could do, so therefore when we do serve Hashem, it's really special. It's really unique. So we find this combination of man and angels, and it is a high holiday theme. Like I said, half the Machzor is about the different kinds of angels. We don't really go into the difference. There's some angels that are called a Seraph. He doesn't translate that. He calls it Seraphim. I don't know if yours translates that or not. I'm on verse 2. What's the different names of the angels? The Machzorim don't really give you a good... I would say part of it is that very few of us have a good perception of angels, so we're unlikely to differentiate between one kind of angel and another. The word Seraph comes from the word Srefa, like a fire. It's like a burnt angel or a very quick angel. But at any rate, we will read his vision and what he saw. from the beginning of chapter 6 again. Bishnas Mos Amelech Uzziah, when it was during the death of Uzziah, and we said Uzziah didn't actually die, he got leprosy. This was a good king that it went to his head. And we've mentioned this before, that sometimes great people, their greatness makes them arrogant, or it makes them think they could do it all. He was the king, and he felt that he should be able to go into the temple and lead the service, just like the Gentile kings would go into be the leaders of the church. The king would be the leader of the religion and the leader of the people. He sought to do that. In Judaism, we always kept that separate. You always got to keep politics and religion separate. It's much better that way, if we maintain the separate divisions. In fact, some people say the Hashmonaim, who were great heroes, had a terrible end. They got involved in the politics, and within a few generations, they were all wiped out. And how could that be? You know, Yehuda Maccabee, all the great Hashmonaim who brought us Hanukkah, it was because they didn't maintain that separation between being the Kohen and being the king. We have to, very important to keep that separation. There are certain jobs that need to be separated. There may, whether it's conflict of interest, whether it's a different focal points. So this king, Uzziah, didn't keep them separate, and he went into the Beis HaMikdash, and he broke out in leprosy. And leprosy in the Jewish people, as long as a person is a leper, they're person non grata. It's considered like a leper is considered like a person who's dead. A leper couldn't come into contact with people. He had to live outside the camp. It's almost the perfect punishment for somebody that's arrogant. In other words, somebody who thinks he's the greatest, and then he breaks out in leprosy, so now all of a sudden he's shunned. Now all of a sudden he's that's a humbling experience when a person has leprosy, or that's what happened with him. Now on the other
when you say leprosy, you mean Tzaraath?
Tzaraath, that's right. The spiritual leprosy, actually. But now when that happened, the people realized that you don't mess with Hashem. It was a miracle that everybody saw. Here you had a healthy king that walks into the Beit HaMikdash, you know, with his crown on and his full glory, and then he comes running out, and he's totally broken out in leprosy. So that was a people had a clear vision of that there's justice in the world, and that people have to recognize boundaries. And it's just interesting that together with that scene, it mentions his vision. According to some people, this was the beginning, his first vision. This was his inaugural. Every prophet remembers the first time. The first time they did, this was his first prophecy. And his prophecy, he's shown a vision up high. We talked about this theme a little bit, that we live in a world down here, but there's parallel worlds. There's other worlds that we don't see. Today in science, we're able to do that. We're able to look in a microscope and see that when we do, you know, it's like when a person sneezes, you don't want to see what's going on in the germ world. Like, the germs are, like, floating all over the room. And but that's just because we don't see it with our eyes. Doesn't mean it doesn't exist. So, spiritually, when things happen, you know, Rosh Hashanah, when we're, or at the Pesach Seder, or the wedding, when we're doing our thing down here, we're surrounded by spiritual things. And sometimes that's when you feel something. You're feeling all the angels and all the spiritual things that are going on in that other world that you don't see. But it's there. It exists, and it's real. It's a parallel world of spirituality that's... some people envision it up in the sky, but it could be just around us. We're told that when we walk in, why is it that certain people, there's something disgusting about them? What is that? You know, why is it that little children are so cute? They say it's because they haven't sinned. In other words, that really, why is it that certain adults we don't like? You know, we don't know what it is about them. Maybe it's because their spiritual energy is so we don't always have our spiritual energy attuned. And I don't like saying that because, you know, sometimes we judge a book by its cover, and that's wrong. But there is something. Something that when we meet a child, or we have some people in the congregation who are special needs people, and they're very beloved. People go over to them and they hug them, and they're most. Some of them have the most friends in the shul. Why is that? Because everybody knows they can't do anything wrong. They're not capable of doing anything wrong, and so the purity that they represent, that they can't sin, We love people that can't sin. All the rest of us, we have all kinds of baggage with us, and so it's harder to love someone who has the... It's easy to love someone, a little child who's as pure as an innocent can be, or a person, a special needs person who doesn't have the mental ability to do something wrong, right? So there's an automatic chain or a love that we have, whereas these are things that, even though we don't see them, they exist. So if a person... a person does certain sins or has committed certain things, he carries a certain spiritual energy with him. There's no question, like after Yom Kippur, we feel different. It's like a lighter feeling or a different feeling. It's
lighter for sure.
Well, lighter has to do with what we don't eat. But there's a feeling, like, I don't know, there, I just you feel. I feel different. I feel like I've gone through a cleansing. I feel, and it's not something that I can see. I mean, I look the same, you know, but mm-hmm. You feel, Rosh Hashanah, you feel, the answer is there's spiritual energy. It does exist. The only thing we can say, though, is if anybody claims they know exactly how it works, then we got to look at them as nobody's the expert here on, nobody has x-ray vision, and nobody's totally spiritual, and nobody knows what the angels look like and the spiritual form. But there is another existence, and this is what he was shown. He was shown a vision, and he sees Hashem. I always, you know what, it's somehow very real, and after Yom Kippur, where they say Hashem Hu Elohim seven times, there's an idea that Hashem comes down to the world, his more intense presence comes down to the world during the 10 days. And in fact, the Baal Shem Tov says, famous for, he says that an example is that people don't usually get to see the king. You know, to get an audience with a king, like, you know, you'd have to wait for years, and you would never get in there. And but the king would go incognito, so to speak, during the 10 days, and he'd be right next to you. And if you only were aware that the king was right next to you, you'd have the opportunity to get everything in life that's a problem could be fixed. You could ask him to solve your poverty. You could ask him to get you the best doctors. You could ask him to free people in prison. And all you have to do is realize that your buddy next to you in shul, next to you in the parking lot, that's the king. He's right here. But people aren't aware that the king is here incognito. That's the 10 days of the Rosh Hashanah, is that the king is right here. That experience of feeling the king. So what happens at the end of Yom Kippur is that Hashem goes back to the seven heavens. He goes back up. And you kind of feel like that loss. And it's strange because you pray Maariv right afterward. It's not the same. It's not the same feeling as, even though you feel pure and cleansed, it wasn't the same feeling as 10 minutes ago when you were davening, and you're still fasting. But you don't feel the same because Hashem's more intense presence has gone back up. It's not as direct. So there are this vision of seeing Hashem's more intense presence. So he was shown a vision, and he sees Hashem's intense presence, and Hashem is perceived as sitting on a throne. Now, in general, Hashem isn't physical. God has no form. We don't believe God has any form. So it's hard to know what it means that God was sitting on a throne. There's a lot of spiritual concepts about what it means, God's throne. What is God? What are the pillars of God's throne? But he was very high, Ram Benisan exalted. And and the bottom part of the throne filled up the temple. So the place where Hashem is perceived in this world, that's the coastal, that's the Wailing Wall, that's in the temple, that's the and so he saw that, he was able to see that vision of Hashem's more intense presence. And verse 2, Sraphim Amdim Malo, he sees those angels, Sheshkenafim. I was supposed to do my homework, why they have six wings. I don't think I did it, but I think it was the six directions, maybe, that it's, you know, east, west, north, and south, and up and down. That's the six-sided, like every, why it's the six. And they would cover their face, Ubishtayim, they would cover their face and feet. The angels are described as being modest. Ubishtayim Yofe, and two they would fly with. Fly, people always paint them like birds. I'm not really sure if they're birds. It's just, again, these are forces, so to speak. And they would call one to another. And they would say, Kaddish, 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 Hashem, three times that Hashem is holy. That's a, three is always a repetitive. When things are done three times, there's always a, we have three forefathers, right? And there's three steps. The world stands on three pillars. Yeah.
If this is not the right venue, I understand how why would the angels call to one another, where is this holy throne?
Right, right, right. The answer is that even the angels, with as much as they perceive, they don't perceive it at all. In other words, Hashem is even beyond the grasp of the angels. There were other religions that worshipped angels, fallen angels, and that they have, they have like some of the. There are some people that are into like angel worship. They got into the Sutton, and it really comes from idolatry. Idolatry didn't like one character. They want to have whole cast. They want to have this one and that one, but even the angels, even those divine beings, they themselves don't fully perceive Hashem. That's how I understood that. That's what they're saying is, where can Hashem be found? So then this word, tzavos, we talked about before, which is Hashem of the multitudes. Whenever that word is used, that denotes that the thousands and the millions and all the different forces. Molochos and the whole world is filled with His glory. V'yanu amos hasafim. And they felt a quaking. This is the vision of Hashem inspires a fear in a person. When a person is physical or flesh and blood, they know that they have a certain amount of sin and that they haven't always lived up to their obligations, and it's scary facing one's maker. Even the very great people and righteous people were somewhat afraid of death, so to speak. They were afraid. The day of judgment to us is scary. Now, on the one hand, we have nice Rosh Hashanah meals. We have faith because we know Hashem has mercy, but we have this awe, this trembling, this quaking. And so he describes the quaking, and that it was full of smoke. Har Sinai was like that. You had the thunder and the lightning. There's something about Hashem's presence that inspires an awe or a. It also inspires a humility. And when a person is confronted with truth, they feel their own smallness. So this is what he says on verse 5. Omer oily. We start with the oi, one of the first. He says, woe to me, kidin mesi. He says, I am lost. I don't belong up here. I'm here with the angels, and the angels are perfect beings. And here's Hashem's presence, and I'm this flesh and blood, this person, this earthly person that's full of sin and full of. So he makes a big mistake over here, and he says, "Ki ish tamei svasayim anochi usoch am tamei svasayim." He says, "I'm a person of unclean lips, and I live amongst people that are unclean." Now, the mistake that he makes is that he calls the Jewish people unclean. And we're never supposed to criticize, not to Hashem, for sure, we're not supposed to criticize, even though the job of the prophet is to tell people when they've sinned, when it comes to talking to Hashem, they never talk bad about the Jewish people. That's their job, is never to, it could be maybe he was trying to mitigate his own. Well, I'm bad, but it's okay because I'm from the group. We're all Tomei, right? So, but that person shouldn't make those kind of excuses either. We talked about this where he gets the hot cold treatment in his mouth for saying this. But he says, "I'm impure. I don't live up to the holiness. I'm not sure." He had thought that he could be. A messenger, and he could be holy, and then when he perceives Hashem, his initial reaction is he feels his smallness, and he says, "There's no way. I thought I could. I thought I was something special, and then I see that I'm just an impure person amongst an impure people." There are comparisons between Yeshaya and Moshe, which is interesting. It has to study if that's a mistake that some of them make, but their primary job is to defend the Jewish people. And some people say Am Kshei Oref. He says the Am, where this it's the Am. It was the Am is like a certain element of the people. They were the ones, but the Jewish people, they were fine. But it's an interesting discussion. But he makes this mistake, and verse 6, V'yoyfei, and it flies to him one of the angels, and the angel is holding the coals, and he goes, and this coal is from the altar, the Igal Piv, and it touches his mouth. And it is interesting, we were talking about last time how Moshe gets the coals in his mouth, and here Yeshaya gets a coal in his mouth. Like, what's that? What's that about? I don't know. It's just interesting. But the Sarah Benech, what can I say? And Hashem forgives him. Hashem says, you know, with this coal, it doesn't say that he screamed or that he cried when the coal touched his mouth. It just was symbolic that, you know, that you don't want to use your mouth in that way. It's a challenge to praise the Jewish people to Hashem and yet to their face rebuke them for their faults. Eliyahu had this challenge. Like Hashem, you know, that was a challenge that Eliyahu faced. He rebuked the people so much that when he came to Hashem, so he said that maybe it's time to get someone else, you know, like for this job, because I can no longer, he couldn't. Some people say that's why he has to visit the Pesach Seder and has to be at every bris, that Hashem said to him, you've given up on the Jewish people, I'm going to show you. You're going to have to, you will see that you never give up on the Jewish people. You know, who would imagine thousands of years ago that people would still be having a Pesach Seder? We've had different low points in history where people have strayed and they've been persecuted and been unable to keep different practices. And if you had said at some of those points, you know, 2,000 years from now, your descendants are going to be, they're going to be eating the same matzah and they're going to be doing the same bris and they're going to be, and who could imagine that we would survive the types of things that we've survived? But that's what Eliyahu testified. So he got the coals on his mouth, and Hashem said he would be forgiven. Okay, that's described here lightly in verse 7. Veshmes kol Hashem. Now he kind of hears Hashem talking in the background, right? He hears Hashem, and there's kind of this expression sometimes that people can go to heaven and hear things. Like, there's a lot of information up there, and you can pick up information. It's described in the Talmud like Machure Hapargud, from behind the curtain. There are certain secrets that are there, and when you're up in heaven, sometimes you can hear things that are from behind the curtain, so to speak, that are there. So while he's there, he hears conversation from Hashem, and he hears Hashem saying, "Es mi yeshlach? Who am I going to send? Who's going to be my messenger? Who's going to represent me to the Jewish people?" So now you might say that after getting the coals in the mouth and being frightened, that he wouldn't want to do this. Being a prophet was not easy. Having to rebuke kings, Yirmiyahu, he got thrown in jail for that. He got struck for that. The prophets, sometimes they were called meshuga. They were called strange. People didn't understand where they were coming from. They were given the messages that they had to give weren't always easy for people to see. So it wasn't an easy job, but the prophets volunteered for it because they, when they realized, they wanted to be like the angels that would be in the service of Hashem. So up here, well, he hears Hashem, he hears the job offer, and he says, "Hineni." That's always been the expression of faith. That's the Avraham Avinu says, you know, "Hineni, here I am." Or, you know, whatever you need, "Shalcheni, send me." So verse 10, "V'yomer leich v'amartu amazeh." So he gives them the message, and he says, "Go and tell the people." He says, "Shimu shamu," you hear v'altavinu, but you don't understand. Sometimes people hear the words go into the ears, but they don't get it. So frustrating if you've ever tried to, you know, give that message to someone, like, you tell them the words, or they hear, but they don't get it. They don't understand. They don't, he says, the people, they heard, but Valtavino, Ru'u, and they see, and they don't know. It just doesn't go. Verse 10, Hashmei Lev Amazeh, their heart is fat. So interesting, today we call it fast, the things that do the blockages in the heart and cholesterol and stuff up the heart is the thing that pumps the body, that we believe the heart is where a person's a good Jew in the heart. That's the where a person's neshama resides, and it has the ability to make a person do the right things in the service of the heart. But if the heart is blocked, if the heart can't pump because there's fat there, it won't work. So his message is, you know, people have, their heart is fat. It's stopped up with fat. And their ears are heavy. And the eyes are, hivasha, hasha, the eyes can't see. And people need to hear and see V'shava rapolo, and if they hear and see, they'll do teshuva, and then they'll be healed. So it's interesting, like, if the people will only listen, if they'll only get the message, then they have the ability to fix things. 11. V'yamrad Moshe Hashem. So, basically, Hashem's message is, you're going to have a hard job, because you're going to talk, and the people won't listen. And they have a heart, but the heart stopped up. So, what's going to be the end result? In other words, if the people aren't going to listen, so what's going to be? How will this end? The Omar Ad Masai. How long? What's the end game? Hashem, Omar, and Hashem says, Ad Asher Imsu Ori Mein Yoshev. You know these cities, they're going to be desolate. Ubati Mein Adam, and the houses are going to be empty. Badama Tishoya. Related, like the word Sha'a, Holocaust. It's going to be a Holocaust on the earth, right? Shamama, that's also one of those words, the desolate. It'll be Shamama. The Hebrew saying like Shamama, like it's just wasted. Harachah Hashem es Adam. And the people are going to be sent far away, the four corners of the world. Rabba Azuva Bekervar. And this place is going to be deserted. Today we look at it, but it happened. It happened exactly as the prophet said, verse 13. Va'od ba'asiri, and only a tenth will survive. Only a tenth of the people will survive Ishava, and they will come back. But they'll be the tenth will be the core. They'll be like the trunk. Asher b'shlachas matzavas and bam zera kodesh matzavaso, and they'll be like a. In other words, like you have a tree which all its leaves fall off or its branches break, but as long as that trunk is intact, then it can rejuvenate itself. So he's given a vision that the Jewish people will lose a lot of the land will become desolate, the people will be sent off far away, but the trunk will remain. He uses an interesting expression. He says, Zera Kodesh. They'll be like holy children. They'll be like... We always view children as holy, by the way. They're our future. That's why, you know, we always have the... Jews have always supported education in the future, and that's the trunk. That's the rejuvenation, is the future, are the children. And so even though the tree is rotted, so to speak, there'll be a future in the... that'll be what'll hold it up. It uses that word matzeves bum zerik mitzavta. That's like the matzeve is like that's the monument. That's the future, and that was the kind of the message that he got, really describing what would happen. In other words, he would try to help preserve the trunk, but then unfortunately the large part of the people refused to hear and refused to listen. And that's the message he would give. Some people say this was his inaugural. This was his appointment to the job. He's given a vision of what will be. Now we get into the practical part over here with the chapter 7. And we will... the prophets do that. They go from being into heaven to back down to earth. You know, what's going on down to earth? Behibi mei Ochaz ben Yosem ben Uziyahu Melech Yehuda. And this was Ochaz, the son of Yosem. And we're here now in the Jewish people when there were still two kingdoms. There was the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. The southern kingdom was Yehuda. It was a much smaller kingdom. At this point, most of the kings from the house of David were righteous. Towards the end, it went back and forth a lot. In other words, it would go up and down. It was like a yo-yo. You'd have a good king, bad king, good king, bad king. That was the... some people say that Uzziyahu's leprosy was a little bit of a shock, I mean, to the family, like that their father had been a good king and had been righteous, and then it went to his head. That's one of the dangers of very great people, is it goes to their head. It doesn't happen to simple people because there's nothing to go to their head, or hopefully then they're a fool. But very great people, sometimes in their minds, they become too arrogant, or they become too... So it went to his head. But then he was leprous, and his son reigned like a regent, like during the life of his father, because his father couldn't govern being a leper. I guess to the children growing up with the father as a leper, and that they were somewhat confused. And during that time, this king was not particularly righteous. In fact, it was pretty bad, Achaz. And in order to get him to wake up, Hashem sent trouble to get him to turn back to Hashem. Who did he send? Olah Ritzin Melech Aram. He sent the king of Aram, and he also sent the Jewish king from the northern kingdom, Pekah ben Ramah, Yeho Melech Yisrael Yushalayim Lemelchama. So he's got two enemies. He's got to worry about the Jewish enemy and the non-Jewish enemy. Sometimes in history that happens, where we have an internal enemy and an external enemy. You know, sometimes the internal enemy is worse than the external enemy. In other words, sometimes we can be our own, you know, worst enemy, so to speak. But he's given both troubles. He's given troubles from the Jewish kingdom, and he's given troubles from the Gentile kingdom. And there was no way that he could combat these two kings. Sometimes you can combat a king, and sometimes the only thing you can do is go inside your walled city and lock the gate and stay in there, and hopefully sometimes that was the best strategy. If you looked throughout the European wars, many times that's what they did, is that they would go to the walled cities, or they would, because an army couldn't survive for that long, because they didn't have lines of supply to supply them with food. You know, today, even today, it's very difficult. Ultimately, that was one of the reasons that the Germans, they extended themselves too thin, and their supply lines all the way to Stalingrad they weren't able to resupply.
You can't beat Russia.
Napoleon tried it also, but Napoleon didn't have modern ways of bringing supplies to the troops. The Germans had a little bit better shot at it, and it didn't work either. But you're right. But in those days, if you could survive long enough, eventually the army would. You just couldn't supply that many. I mean, when you think about it, that's been the strategy, you know, with a lot of people with the U.S., is that they, like in Afghanistan, that they know the Americans are going to go back sooner or later. They're not going to stay here forever. They're not going to, you know, they can see how long are they going to pay to keep all these troops here and spend these billions of dollars. Eventually they're going to go back, and they just got to wait them out. And that's, unfortunately, that's been part of the, because the reality is, it's very difficult to keep a big army supplied and, and going. So that's the only hope they had, was to survive the siege. So he was siege in Yerushalayim, and during the time of siege, all the people from the countryside came up to live in Yerushalayim. He doesn't even call him, doesn't mention the king by name. Sometimes when Hashem was angry with him, when you're angry with somebody, it's even hard to say their name. That's just the way it is. You don't want to. So Hashem just says the house of David. It was told to them. Nocha Ram al Ephraim. They told them that, guess what? You've got two enemies now. You got a Ram and Ephraim, the under Levavo. And when they heard that, that was like the worst of all. Like, they have two superpowers, they're against this tiny little kingdom of Yehuda. And not only was the king worried, Levav Amo, the people also. Kanod Asayar Mnei Ruach. And they trembled the same way when the wind blows and the leaves rustle. So like in the fall, any little wind, you see the leaves rustle. The people were just like terrified. They just were, they were like blowing in the wind. They just had no hope. So, verse 3, V'yomar Hashem al Yeshayo. So Hashem tells the prophet, say na, please go. Interesting, Hashem says please here. I don't know why he had to say please. Likra, I have to see if he always says please. Say na, likra, zacha, zacha. Maybe it's because of the way the request was. He says, I want you to go to see Achaz. And very interesting, some of the prophets have visuals. Some of them, sometimes they brought their family with them. You know, bring your child to work day. So he was told to bring his son with him to work. And there was a message in the prophet in what he named his son. He named his son Shar Yashuv. The name of the son means the rest will do teshuvah. Whoever's left, whatever remnant there will be, Shar Yashuv. And that's what he named his son. And there's a famous yeshiva called Shar Yashuv that's in Far Rockaway. They was started by there was a lot of assimilation in the U.S. There still is, but there was one great outreach expert. His name is Rabbi Feifeld, and he was, during the times of the 60s and 70s, during the hippies, he was era. He was able to take the kids who were very assimilated and very into the modern culture and bring them back. And so he named his yeshiva Shar Yashuv. Now, today it's no longer quite the same, it's already a few generations later, and I don't know if they, I'm sure they have an outreach arm, but it wasn't like it was in those days where a guy would come up, you know, on a motorcycle with earrings and they'd bring him in and put his arm around him and start learning Gemara with him, and, but it was an interesting picture. But that you may have heard, I'm sure they still send out, people see them, but that's Shar Yashuv. That's the, I know that some people have their children learning in that yeshiva from Atlanta, but that's the name, Shar Yashuv. So go to that place, and he says, go to the water, to the place of the water. Now, some people, the water during the siege was everything. There are two parts of this. Sometimes you needed to ensure that there'd be water in the city, and other times you had to be sure that there wouldn't be water for the enemy who was attacking. So he said, go over there and you'll meet the king in that place where the people were washing. And he describes where it is, Messias de Kovis, and it's near the washerman's field. He gives him directions where to find him. Apparently the king was going in secret. If the king was thinking of stopping up the water supply, that meant things were very desperate. And so perhaps the king didn't want the people to know that's what he was doing. Verse 4, Amarte Lavi Shamar Vahashkit. And he said to the king, don't worry, Hishamar, be calm. Things are protection, the hashkate, and they're sheket, they're quiet. Out here, don't be afraid. Ulevovcha al yerech, and don't be afraid in your heart. Now, what are you afraid of? Mishne zanvo saudim. You're afraid of these two big firebrands, the two enemies, the Jewish enemy and the non-Jewish enemy. Now he describes them as an ember. An ember makes a lot of it's very scary because it's very hot and you see the fire, but then it goes out. So basically what he's telling him is, these two big fires that are coming against you, they're just like an ember. They're going to blow out. He calls them a firebrand. These are the two enemies. Don't worry about them. They're going to make a lot of noise. They're going to seem very fearful, but they're going to go out. They won't be able to overcome the Jewish people at this time. Verse 5. And they're planning to do evil. Now, what were they saying? What these two, what they were trying to do is they were trying to depose the king from the house of Yehuda, and they wanted to put their own leader. That was how they took control. So he describes what their plan was. Yan ki yotelecha aram ra, Ephraim uben Ramal Yahu lemo. This is what they want to do. Verse 6. Now lebi Yehuda. They want to go up to Yehuda, nakitenu. And they want to cut it down. They want to put their own king in charge, a king that'll do their bidding. They want to get rid of you, and the name of the king is going to be called Ben Tival. So there's a debate if there was a person called Ben Tival who was the candidate who was going to take over, or the word Tival means Rashi says Ben Tov Eleinu. We're going to put a king who's going to be good for us. We don't want you. You're not good for us. We're going to put our own king in the country who's going to be good, Ben Toval, like a Ben from a king who'll be good for us. So that was the plan of your enemies. Verse 7, Yeshayahu gives the prophecy to the king, Koamar Hashem Elokim, Lo Tokim. Don't worry about it. It'll never happen. But Lo Tia, it'll never be. It's very interesting why he has to say both. But it'll never come about, and it won't be. This is a firebrand. And then he says, not only that, Kirosh Aram Damashek, because Aram, they have no business over here, they belong in Damascus, let them stay out of Israel. Urosh Damashek with Sinu, V'od Shishim V'chamish Shanavim, you know the 10 tribes? They're on the way out. Yachas Ephraim Ayam, they won't even be around. History, they're going to disappear. The lost tribes are about to go lost. So, they don't belong here, you have nothing to be afraid of, they're going to go back home, this is not their place, they think they're going to take this place over, they're going to be gone. History is going to, it's going to happen to them. Achaz was an idol worshiper, but apparently the people were, sometimes the kings themselves weren't worthy of it, but the people were good. And so, like, in spite of the fact, of the king's own shortcomings, the people themselves were worthy of being delivered. And so, you know, over here the message was that they had, and then sometimes the people that are doing the attacking, if they're wicked, they have no right to, and a certain way that's what he's saying, you know, don't, you know, Damascus and Ephraim, they don't belong here. They, they're going beyond their boundaries. And that perhaps they're wrong in their attack. Rosh Ephraim, Shomer, and the king of Ephraim doesn't belong in Shulam, he belongs in Shomer, Rosh Shomer, and then Ramayo, Imlo Taminu, Kilo Saminu. Now, you might not believe me, but you should know it's because it's hard to believe. That's great. You know, if you don't believe me, im lo taminu ki lo semanu. You may not believe me because it's not easy to believe. Like, now here these big enemies are coming, and the troops are like, you know, multitudes, and things look really bleak. And he says, you know, don't worry about them, they'll be gone, and nothing to worry about. You may not, it's hard to believe, but you're not a person of faith. It is something that's hard to see. But Yosef Hashem Deber Lemor, and Hashem says, let me make a sign. If you'll give me a chance to, in other words, Hashem is asking him to see that what's going to happen. And he even is saying, let me make a sign so that you'll know that it's true. Like, a lot of people will tell you a lot of things. How do you know where truth lies? You know, the you know, especially in politics, right? Everybody tells you this and tells you that, and definitely. And so how do you know this prophet? So we're going to see that he's going to make a sign for him. We'll have to stop here. In chapter 7, in the middle of chapter 7. And I want to wish everybody a sweet, happy, healthy new year. Maybe described in the Book of Life for a good, sweet, you know, only good things. And Hashem answer all our tefillah.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the Donate link. Thank you very much.